Inspire Instructor Training Podcast, where the learning never stops.
Welcome to the Inspire Instructor Training Podcast. I am joined by my lovely co-host, Diana Todd. I feel like I've just given you a podcast promotion there.
As opposed to lackey.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I will take said promotion. And in the words of Clarkson's Farm, you're fired.
So, shall we? We are back to our normal format tonight of Phil's thoughts and Diana's digs deeper. And is there any industry news? No, I think we kind of covered the industry news last week with the consultation. So, yeah, I don't think anything else is too exciting has happened in the industry.
No.
Not that I want to talk about anyway. Let's move on straight into Phil's thoughts. And anybody watching live on Facebook, please feel free to check your comments in or questions, and we can interact and answer those questions. I've got it up here in front of me, so I can see those comments coming in. So my Phil's thoughts today are all about putting yourself in the role of a learner. Now, I don't mean a learner driver necessarily here. I mean the role of learning something new. Now, this is something I've recently done and massively seen the benefits of. But it's something Lou always used to say and always used to suggest to us to go on courses and go put yourself in that role of a learner, because not only are you learning something new, which is always good and fun and develops you, but also from a point of view of a trainer or instructor, you're seeing it from the other side, and you can see maybe some of the traits that in whoever's delivering the course or coaching you or whatever, you can see their traits maybe in something you do. And if you don't like it from that learner role, then maybe it's something you can recognize and change within your own training. So I think there's like a double whammy sort of kind of learning going on there when you put yourself in that sort of kind of learner role. Now, this can be within the industry. So we can go, come onto a Zoom, go and go on a workshop. We have one coming up. Seeing how we interact with people, maybe within that workshop, might be things that you see and go, oh, actually, I quite like how they took that person's question and turned it around, or vice versa. Like, oh, I didn't like how they didn't respond to my answer or something. And how that sometimes can make you feel. So the thing I did recently is with the gym that I go to, they offered an advanced theory course, they called it. It was effectively learn a little bit more about the methodology of the gym and how they do their programming and what their philosophy is, and also a little bit about coaching within, like how they do their coaching, which I was really intrigued of, because I think it's interesting that considering, like, we do coaching and how it all interacts and merges together. And I found a few sort of kind of real sort of kind of key moments in that. One example, I had to get up and describe how to do a deadlift, and I can absolutely do a deadlift. I can talk about deadlifts as well. It's my favorite movement. But when I had to describe it in a particular order, to a set criteria, I tried to make it natural to me, but my brain was like, oh, what's the next thing I'm going to talk about? And that just made me a bit stuttery, a bit dry, and a bit sort of kind of like I wasn't talking like I'm talking now. And that really helped me empathize with PDIs who know how to drive, know how to move the car off, for example, but when you ask them to explain it and in a particular order and suddenly get those words out, there's suddenly this moment of, What do I do? How do I say that? Like, how do I move off? And I think that's it's really interesting sort of being in that role and sort of kind of seeing, okay, I get it. Like it, and obviously I've been through that process, but it was quite a while ago. So I think there was that element of learning. I also took note of how the trainer delivered the course on the day. Because that's obviously something we do, and how he welcomed everybody, how he started the day off, how he explained things, and all of those sort of kind of things you can sort of kind of take from other trainers, I suppose, and other people who deliver these even outside the industry. And I think that was quite interesting to, yeah, sort of kind of see that and interact with that. Also, a lot of the courses online, and obviously we do that, so I'm learning from that as well. And I think everyone else would take different. Like we're in quite a unique position with what we offer. A lot of our people listening go and do driving lessons, and but it doesn't mean you can't take from being feeling like that learner. I tell you a good example because obviously a lot of those were like positives. There was absolutely a negative in there. Where we got asked to list the like five skills of a coach or five attributes of a coach. Now I went into my attributes of a coach as in like listening skills and things like that, but actually it was very different in their world. But what was really interesting was it was chuck out answers and they would get not dismissed, but just it was like keep shouting stuff until you get one right. That sort of kind of vibe. And you feel sort of kind of like, what about my answer though? What was like, so I checked out like listening and actually was like, oh, no, keep going, sort of kind of thing. It wasn't done in a horrible way, but it felt dismissive. And I'm sure it wasn't meant that way, but it felt it. And I think that's important because like, how often do we do that with learners where we go like, what do you think happened there? And they'll give you a reason and then you go, well, maybe, but then what else? And it's interesting seeing that from the other side of the feeling dismissed because it wasn't the answer they were looking for. Whereas I'm fully okay with it not being the answer they were looking for, but maybe let's dig into it a little bit and actually can we link it to one of the answers we were looking for, and bring it round. So yeah, that's my thoughts for today. And I think the biggest thing I would say from that is go put yourself in the learner role, whatever that is, outside the industry, within the industry, go be a learner.
Love that. I could hear Lou as well in that moment, and I often think of Lou when I was watching, and she used actually a similar example where I was watching Sophia's swimming instructor, quite frankly, use her arms, pull her arms into position. You can imagine me at the side. I'm going, leave her be, let her figure it out. And I literally was watching this getting like angrier and angrier. Needless to say, she doesn't do swimming anymore. It's interesting as well. You made a point there where you said about dismissing people's points, and it's so funny because I actually think people put some of that pressure on themselves as well. So I totally hear what you're saying, where the instructor goes, yeah, and yeah, and what else, what else? And they sort of have this idea in their head. I had a pupil today, new to me, and I was asking her my questions, like I knew she was full license holder, and I'll come to her. She's actually part of my Diana Digs Deeper. And I'll come to her in a minute. And I asked her a question, which is one of my many. And she was like, she answered it. I can't remember. And she went, is that right? And I was like, no, I genuinely don't mind whatever the answer is. Like, you know, we almost put that pressure on ourselves because there was never any comment. And I think actually it happened in a PDI session today as well. And he said something, and he was like, is that the answer you're looking for? I was like, no, I genuinely don't have an answer in my head. I really don't. And he proved that by giving me an absolute whopper of an answer that I wouldn't have expected. And it was great. Fantastic. I tell you what, as well, you said about putting yourself in the learner role. And we often say about, you know, the fact that we learn from our pupils, we learn from trainers, we learn from instructors, etc., etc. So Apostle, I'm gonna name call him today because it was a really nice, not name call him, but you know what I mean. Shout out to Apostle today, because we were doing a little bit of one-to-one and we had Anne in the back, who's one of the support mentors. And I was giving him some examples of how I was feeling in a certain situation. And he used this wonderful phrase, and I did feel heard. And I wanted to mention this because it really helped me appreciate how good an instructor he will be, because he turned around and he said, "So am I right in saying that we need to find a solution to drive your worries away?" It's like, yes, we do, Apostle. Yes, we do. It was brilliant, because I was saying that I had felt worried about something, and I was. And do you know, it was just so, wasn't cheesy. It sounds it when I say it, but it was just so natural. And I thought, and Anne, I said, oh, I like that. She went, "I'm writing it down." So it was really nice. So yeah, what trainer turned pupil, I suppose, because I absolutely am stealing that and loved it. So yes.
Definitely. And it's a good little phrase. Before we move on to your dialing things deeper, shall we answer some of the questions that have come in actually?
Yes.
So Dan has said, "I'm on hold for part two, whoop whoop. How long should I wait before starting your pathway training for Pink?"
No. Let's do it now.
I was going to say how long's a piece of string, but yeah, absolutely. I think I generally start pathway training with my PDIs the date from day one. Yes, we do a bit of part two stuff to start with, but I believe that as you're doing the part three training, you become better, a better driver, because you get a better understanding of the processes and you drill into all of the routines, and you get better at looking on down the road. So the part three training will make you a better at the part two. So yeah, now next question. Do you want me to read them?
Well, for now.
On my part three test, when a pupil made a mistake, but it's not dangerous. So as the instructor, you need to fix that fault. Do you have to stop and talk about it, or can you fix it on the move?
So it really does depend. If you can, and Phil's laughing at me because we generally say that, but let me give you some clarity. But
No,
basically,
my mind was more because this question comes up so much that I think we just need to do an entire whole video on it if we have.
yeah, exactly. That's true. If you can fix it on the move, and if the pupil can learn from it and it doesn't then create more issues on the move, i.e., they can talk about it, hear it, understand it, then put it right on the move without any other rubbish going on, fix it on the move. If for any other reason you have to, like if, for example, if you're talking and they're just getting a bit distracted, or if they're maybe just paying lip service to what it is you're saying, where they go, yeah, I get it, but you've got that gut feeling that they don't get it and understanding hasn't happened, or if you're potentially coming into a situation that is going to be more complex, pull them over and talk about it so that you've got a chance to really allow them to digest it. Ultimately, if it's safe, crack on.
An example from today. So I was on a lesson today, and we were working on approach speed and sliding into first on the approach to the junction, because people had just been forgetting to go into first. And we actually did a bit of a hill junction. It wasn't my intention to be doing hills. It just, I live in Devon, they're all hills. And he, the pupil did go into first a little bit too late, which was what kind of caused this issue. We rolled back, and then there was just a bit of a nightmare at the junction. We had to get away from the junction because there was people around, so I supported him with that. Then there was a couple of like lefts and rights going on. There wasn't really anywhere to pull over, and then there was a long straight road. And on that long straight road, we had a little bit of a chat about what could have caused that, and went and dissected it a little bit. Took us about a minute, I would say, to have that conversation. Pupils fairly advanced, so can talk and drive at the same time. And then we went straight into going to like, and I I was already, while having the chat, heading towards some hills junctions because I was like, well, we're going to go have a look at that again. And by the time we got to the hill junctions, he was ready to have a go at the hill junctions, and we didn't need to pull over. Later on in the lesson, the pupil had an issue with understanding giving way to a pedestrian. And we started to have a chat, and I could hear that he just didn't understand it. So we pulled over and had a chat. And I think that was the big difference for me. It wasn't like I probably could have had that chat with him on the move, but learning wouldn't have been taking place as we were doing that drive. And so it just made sense to pull over, allow him that brain space to think. And I think that's how I work it out generally, is like you can hear it in your pupil's voice and you can see it in their driving. And you can see it in the road that we're going on, is like all of those little things like come together to make that decision. There is no right or wrong. It's make a gut call. I think if you're doubting it, pull over. That'd be my, because actually, if there's doubt there, it's probably because there's stuff going on or because you're struggling yourself. And I do wonder as well, as an element of being more experienced as an instructor, that probably allows me to manage both those things. So I had a PDI in the back, and he mentioned that conversation actually, and said he liked how I that conversation got like happened, paused, another junction, happened, paused, another junction. And it was like it happened over a series of like three or four roads, because I was able to kind of pause those moments. They weren't hill junctions. We carried on working what we were working on. And I knew when to stop the pupil from thinking about it and concentrate on the road, and when to allow him to process again. And I think that's a skill. So if you're struggling with that, just pull over. That's
Yeah, I think it's a very un-British thing to do, interrupt people's thought processes and talking.
what you mean?
I
Sorry, what?
think you've mastered that skill, mate. But I think you have to get comfortable with doing that. I remember as a PDI, I'd ask a really meaty question, then be hurtling towards a roundabout, and the pupil would be trying to answer the question and do it, and I'm gonna die. And I wouldn't interrupt them. Like, it's absolutely fine to say, hold that thought, talk to me about this. Or if they're rabbiting on about their boyfriend, I had a pupil whose granny had a boyfriend, which tickled me like so much. But she was talking about her granny and her boyfriend, and there was this whole dry, it was like something from EastEnders. And she'd be rabbiting on. I go, I'd love to hear the rest of that. I need you to tell me what you're going to do at this roundabout. And then you have to get okay with doing that, because they then pick it up after the roundabout. And I was often quite excited to learn what had happened with the granny and the boyfriend and, the holiday saga and all the rest of it. So, yeah, get comfortable with that if you can.
Shall I read out the next question?
Yes, Darren, do you want me to ask you it since
Go on then.
I answer that? Although it does feel like a very me question, because I get on my high
Well,
horse.
in that case, I'm taking it.
Okay, Darren Turney has said, management of risk. When clarifying with a pupil how much support they require, and they say, well, I'll have a go and you just jump in if you see I need the help. Is this sufficient in being proactive as opposed to reactive when managing risk? Should we be guiding if there's any signs that they are not fully independent if the risk needs to be managed? And I'm just laughing because it happens a lot, Darren.
Yeah, it's people's favorite answer to that question, isn't it? And probably actually leans towards don't ask that question. Don't let them say that answer. Basically, give them options, give them suggestions of what sort of level of support would make sense. So, would it make sense if I prompt you for the next few goes and then we see how we're getting on? Something like that. Because as an instructor, you know that they need a bit of support. So if they need a bit of support for the next one, don't let them have that option of not needing that, not like, because pupils will say, well, I'll give it a go. So absolutely, I think I just wouldn't be offering them that option unless I was okay with them saying it. So if I was okay with, if I was sat there thinking, I don't mind supporting this pupil for this, but actually I wouldn't also mind them just giving it a go because they might get it. Then I'll give them the option fits as a feeler for like how confident they are. And then I'll go with whichever one. So I think there's that element of just being a bit aware of where you want to be. To answer the second part of the question, is it sufficient for being proactive? No. So don't go out with the intention of it might go right and it might go wrong. Go out on that first, like this, like imagine this is your first thing you're going to do on part three or any lesson you're delivering. You've decided. So again, if I use my example on my lesson today, again, it was going to be the pupil needed to be a bit more conscious about going into first gear on the approach to junctions. He just kind of kept forgetting and ended up staying in second. So we had that chat at the start of the lesson. If he'd have said to me, I'll just give it a go, Phil. You jump in if I'm getting it wrong. I'm like, no, that's what I've already been doing. I've already seen you get it wrong and jumped in and stopped you from moving off in second gear. Learning's net effectively, we're going off and getting good at getting it wrong. So in that moment, you've got to get ahead of the game. You've got to, in some way, get some sort of proactive so that he starts getting it right. So we learn from that sort of positivity of like, oh, that's what it felt like to go into first gear at the appropriate time and be ready. In this particular scenario, and it doesn't always have to be prompting, I actually think, and this pupil is probably beyond the level of he should be for forgetting to go into first. It's like previous instructors, I think, maybe hadn't necessarily prepped him well in that sort of kind of area. So I didn't feel like I needed to prompt him every single time. So actually we switched it around and I got him to tell me he was going into first at junction. So making it more of a conscious thing, that can count as being proactive. And if he wasn't saying it, then I would come in and then if it didn't work, I would have upped my level of instruction and gone that way. But yeah, you want something in place that's better than let's have a go, help me if I get it wrong, which is basically what that is.
It's almost fighting against what they've been told their entire life. Because their entire life, it's very much you can do anything. If you try, keep practicing, you'll get it right. That is how we are taught and how we grow up. It's how we're taught our times tables, it's how we write, etc., etc. So you can understand why the pupils come out and say something like that. But there was something you sparked a thought in me as well, actually, when it really does also depend on the way the pupil learns as well. So, like you said, sometimes I'll give them that option if I really don't care what the answer is, but I have to be mindful on how that might affect the pupil because some pupils will absolutely beat themselves up if they make a mistake, even though they really want to try and get it right. So if I find myself, and you can save this sometimes, Darren, I think it was, wasn't it? You can save this if you find yourself catching that question, how much help do you want from me? And they go, I'll just have a go and you step in when needed. You can save yourself from that question by saying, okay, no, I admire that. I admire that you want to get to that independent level. When you're learning something, do you like to learn from a positive experience, see it going well, and then put that in place? Or do you rather, have a go, get it wrong, and then somebody tells you you've got it wrong and you try and put it right? Which one has worked well for you in the past? And then they recognize it usually and go, oh, no, actually, no, I'll, no, help me. I'll learn from the positives and then I'll move to independent. So you have got because, and the reason I wanted to give you that get out of jail card is a lot of the training manuals will do that. A lot of the trainers, and it's almost in a vocabulary of trainers, and they say, how much help do you want from me? So it's often a question that instructors will ask. And if they haven't watched this or haven't been on Inspire, it might just be their go-to. But that's your get out of jail card if you are trying to shift that and you still catch yourself doing it. as well. Dan, how do you get around the I don't know answer to your questions? Now, I absolutely love that question. And I'm going to be really cheeky and say there's a massive Zoom, or well, it's not massive, it's a normal size Zoom, on Inspire Instructor Training with very specific advice on that. And I couldn't do it justice by going into the I don't know Zoom just now. And I know you're obviously one of our members. So I might direct you to that if you don't mind. And I actually might ask you if you don't mind, sorry, Dan. And please, everybody, feel free to ask questions. I won't give you all homework. But please, could you possibly message us a follow-up to what you've learned from the I don't know and how you're going to utilize it in your next lesson, if you don't mind. Hi, Fiona. It seems like you have found a way of getting a comment on here, which is great. So Phil, did you let him stall moving off in second gear? Sometimes learning from the mistake is all it takes.
Possibly not today because we went and got it right today. And he didn't necessarily get it wrong today. But it might have been, I can't remember. I don't remember that my lessons that far back, but I assume there was an issue. I absolutely hear where you're coming from. Just for other people listening, and I know Fiona probably would have caveated this if she wasn't texting it rather than because you're limited with your words, is B, make sure that's safe. So there is absolutely right. Sometimes letting someone experience what being in the wrong gear feels like is great. But if it means stalling and you're going to get hit from behind, then no. Or if it means stalling and you're going to stagger out into the roundabout and then stall mid in the middle of the roundabout, then don't. And I know that's not what Fiona's saying, but I'm just being wary of PDIs maybe potentially listening that and hearing that and just going, oh, I'll let my people stall. So yeah, absolutely learning from experience in that scenario can absolutely be really helpful and sometimes deliberately as well. So not actually just sitting back and letting the mistake happen. Sometimes if you've got a pupil who's struggling to understand like the benefits of being in certain gears, go put them in the wrong gear and show them what it feels like, and then put them in the right gear and then ask them what that feels like. Yeah, it's that sort of experience in it. But yeah, thank you, Fiona.
Interestingly, actually, I'm going to add to that as well, that can also complement when a pupil is worried about the behavior of other drivers. And again, caveat, keep it safe, etc. But sometimes I will have them stall on purpose to show, well, when I talk manual, but certainly with PDIs and some of their pupils. I will get them to stall on purpose to show that most people are actually patient. You'll get several people that just wait nicely. And you can almost sort of see how many people do we have to stall in front of before somebody does something negative, and obviously change it up, et cetera, but play with that because the majority of people out on the road are actually decent human beings. I genuinely believe that. I don't have this negative, what's the word? Negative, perception of people on the road. I have the odd person that is slightly aggressive, for want of a better word, if I'm honest, but I can count them on one hand across my whole driving career. So yeah, that is a nice way to do that. And it actually leads me really nicely into my Diana Digs Deeper section. See what I did there? Excellent segue into my Diana Digs Deeper section. Because I specifically wanted to talk about anxiety and especially the kind that can come up behind the wheel. And it does feel like this huge emotional wave. And I had a pupil today, full license holder, who her, I won't give you the background, but anyway, full license holder, doesn't go on the motorway, has anxiety over it, and has asked for, motorway lessons with me. Which I asked her, how she was feeling in the moment. And it's something I heard recently where people that choose to get additional lessons. I think it was from Kevin Tracy. I just heard it off the cuff. People who choose to get additional lessons after a test because of anxiety will often go out with instructors that manage their ability rather than their mindset. And then they almost kind of go away no better off because they can do the motorway. They can do it. You know, they can drive from A to B. But it's their mindset in particular sections. So I made a point of managing that with this pupil. And I'd said to her, okay, I need you to help me understand what the word anxiety means for you, because that's what she kept saying when she made the inquiry. And she described it as a feeling like a rabbit caught in the headlights. So I gently asked her how she would describe that. How is it showing up for her? And we did a first drive, first of all, and I sort of dug in a little bit. And then we did one drive, and I said, okay, tell me how this is resonating with you. What's happening in your body? And she said, well, I'm getting tension in my arms and my shoulders. And she said, I'm getting a racing heartbeat. And this obviously was a slightly longer period of time. And she went, and I get that feeling of sort of being frozen in place, that rabbit in the headlights type of environment. The beauty of that conversation was it gave us three very specific areas that we could then work on. So first, and I know I've talked about this many times before, we reframed that language. And instead of calling it anxiety, we used the word uncomfortable. So that small shift helped her feel a little bit more in control. We then started to evaluate what, from a scaling point of view, she was feeling in those moments and when they were being triggered. So I said to her, okay, so let's take the tension in your arms and your shoulders. If one is that you've got spaghetti arms, just like Patrick Swayze wanted in Dirty Dancing, and 10 is that you're driving in a straitjacket, where are you at? And she gave me her number. Where would you like to be then by the end of the lesson? And how are we going to get there? And then we went through that with a racing heartbeat and that feeling of being frozen in place. So we broke it down really practically. And for our arms and our shoulders, we focused on sort of loosening up, like almost imagining that she had two suitcases hunched up and she was walking into the hotel and she was lowering them down. And that simple movement of this really started to relax her arms, and she started to be able to glide around the motorway because what she was doing was stiffening her arms. And as the bend of the motorway curved, she was pretty much like in the middle lane instead of the left lane. And then she was able to steer more fluidly. For her heart that was racing, we introduced simple breathing techniques. So again, we did breathe in like you're smelling flowers. Blow out like you're blowing bubbles. This was actually followed by a grounding exercise by San Harper, which I had been on her mindfulness and compassion course, so we introduced that to her. And then for the frozen feeling, we came up with the plan that gave her a sense of direction and structure because for each part of the drive, she was able to articulate what she was about to say. And I introduced her to the ABC technique. So we talked about, of course, acknowledging that emotion, naming it, not fighting it, giving herself that evidence of why everything was going to be okay, because she had me in the car, she's driven safely before, she is a full license holder, she can pull over if she needed to. And of course, C is for that calm, introducing her to the calming strategies, helping her recognize when that feeling was starting to trigger and isolate those emotions. And because we did that in a way that was measurable, it actually started to help her recognize it as being manageable. And it wasn't this like vague cloud of anxiety anymore, because it was something that she could understand, she could recognize, and more importantly, work with. And it started with such a simple question, that was, how is that showing up for you? When you mention the word anxiety, what's happening? And it was as simple as that. And because she then was able to identify those three areas, we got it right down. And our scale ended up being, if one is that you are a Zen yoga guru, and 10 is that you are stressed out, you're not. My Glaswegian. Where are you at? Now, I think she was a 5 at one point, and then we got down to a 3.5. Then we did another drive, and she went up to a 5 again because there was a bit of, I pushed her into the outside. I didn't physically push her, but I, stretched that goal. And then we brought her back down to that 1. And she did get a 1. She went to full on Zen guru. And it was interesting for her to recognize that those emotions will fluctuate. And I think it was really important for her to see that. So I wanted to share that with you today. Any
Perfect.
insight?
No, I'm not necessarily going to add to it because I just like the story.
Yeah.
I think what actually I really sort of kind of saw in that was the benefit of CPD, because you just listed like techniques from like three or four different courses you've been on, and all of those like came together as like little sort of strings to your bow to be able to help this one particular pupil. And I think it does show that benefit of continuously trying to improve yourself, because you get that pupil and then you've got the tools in your toolbox to help them out.
100%. Yeah. And I didn't understand it, any of it before. Now I just, it's my go-to. Absolutely. If anybody has any questions, I'm going to ask Phil to answer this question. What would you do with a pupil who can't articulate those feelings or reframe the word anxiety or describe how it's showing up for them?
I think I, you know what I would do? And actually, it's in a way with what you have done, which is lean towards scaling. I think that's a really helpful tool to help people start by describing their feelings. So that can be helpful. Options is also another option. So like, give me like throw out some loads of, and I think particularly with something like feelings, you are really guessing. So throw out a lot of options. Don't just throw out what you think it is, because they are likely to go, yeah, that one, because they just want to please you and they just don't want to be in this conversation. So they'll just agree. So chuck out a whole bunch of options so that they got some stuff to choose from, and then they will more likely choose one that makes sense to them. Could they write it down? As in, they may not feel comfortable having a conversation with you. Could they write it down and then bring it to the lesson? Or text it to you. Like, it might just be a face-to-face thing that's making them feel stressed about having that conversation. Could they mind map it? Could, like, just I'm thinking different ways for people to explore their thought process and feelings. Even like a drawing, like somebody might draw it, or like whatever that like that pupil resonates with. It might be, so if they're an artist, for example, you might go, well, draw me like an expression of how you feel about driving. And I think that would be really interesting to sort of kind of see how they come up with it. So yeah, maybe some other ways of having that conversation, or different types of scales might help them come out with that option. And then if not, throw options at them.
Yeah, I've started. I think I put a top tip the other day, which was have a bank of alternative words to see if your pupil can resonate with some of them. And just save some of them and almost like show them little flashcards. So for words like anxiety, I would maybe say something like challenging, uncomfortable. I'm trying to think of any other positive words. Something.
I just having said that, you know what I'd do? I'd ask ChatGPT. Come up with 10 or 20 words and ask your pupil to see which. Because actually, the beauty of that is if you're coming up with the words, again, it's that the pupil trying, like you were saying earlier, people kind of going, is that what you wanted to hear, sort of kind of thing. And I think if you're coming up with them, they're trying to guess which one they think you want them to say. Whereas actually, if you get an AI bot to do it for you, there is no correct. Like they're not going to be like, well, I want, which one does he want me to say?
Yeah, that's quite good actually. I like that. I think it, like you say, it's important for them to try and come up with their own. But if they've got a pick and mix of something that they can choose from, that they can anchor that feeling to, that is more positive, then I think we need to go down that route. And almost all of my pupils that enter my car that even think about mentioning the word nervous, I'm like a ninja. I'm like that. Help me reframe that. So it's right from the get-go because I've had so many, not so many, but I've had some extreme cases where it has absolutely derailed progress. So I'm keen to nip that in the bud wherever possible. So I hope that rounds up. Thank you, Kat. What a lovely question to finish on as well. And I hope that our podcast and our live Q&A has inspired you guys to be the best instructor that you can be. And we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Inspire Instructor Training Podcast, where the learning never stops.